Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room. Third hour is on. I'll be joined shortly by Ian Wendt. But my guest now is Naomi Seibt, S-E-I-B-T, Naomi X, NaomiSeibt.com on Rumble as well under that name. And you were just making such a powerful statement there at the end. We were coming up against a pre-program break, so we had to go to commercial there. But what you were saying was so powerful. I didn't want to cut you off. So I thought we'd spend this first 5 minutes of this hour sort of finishing that thought, and again expressing what a valuable thing the First Amendment is. How Europe is going down a very dark path. A lot of people in America are trying to follow that path. We saw a video from today of Obama saying, maybe we need a little bit of government control of speech. The First Amendment's great, but that's unacceptable, and we have to understand the true horror that awaits us if we go down that road. And we've had a lot of issues with asylum in the last little while. I'm not the biggest fan of the asylum program, but I've always said from day one, the asylum program is good. It's something America should do. We should be a safe haven for people who are under threat from their own governments. And that's why I don't like people abusing it, because if you abuse it and it has to go away, then real people that really need help aren't going to get it. So whether it's somebody like yourself who's under threat from your own government and radicals in your own country, you're not being protected by your government, free speech activists in Europe, people in South Africa under, you know, threat because of their race, this is who the asylum program should be for. I really hope that you're accepted and get asylum here in America. You'd be the first German to do so, but I doubt you'd be the last. If you would like to finish your thoughts about asylum and your plans into the future and how people can support and follow you, Naomi.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to mention, because you just pointed it out, how the asylum system shouldn't apply to everyone. I have been asked this question now multiple times, and they think it's this gotcha moment where they come to me and they say, don't you think it's very ironic that you're applying for asylum now, but you're against migrants in Germany? Uh-huh. But there is a big difference. That's not the gotcha moment you think it is, because I just don't want people who don't agree with our Western principles, who are an actual danger to our society and who don't respect the German flag, the German constitution. I don't want them in our country, because that's a threat to our citizens. And the government has a responsibility to protect their citizens first. And I came to the United States fully supporting the American government, the American country, the American people. And I am extremely patriotic about America. I celebrated 4th of July. Right. So I truly love America for what it is, and especially for the First Amendment. The Second Amendment, too. I have been to a shooting range already. I am truly hoping that in the future, I can give to Germany what I see in America now. Obviously, Germany is never going to turn into America 100%. And it shouldn't, because Germany is different. Germany truly has a different culture. But I want Germany to have that kind of freedom and the courage, and especially the patriotism. Because now, just a few days ago, there were anonymous patriots who put up a bunch of German flags.
Right.
And now the German intelligence agencies are investigating.
Oh my God.
Because patriotism is illegal, apparently.
It is so crazy. I mean, that out of all the crazy stuff, getting in trouble for raising your own country's flag has to be, you know, a new mark on the absurdity scale. But it's hard to compete when you've got them banning the most popular party to preserve democracy and putting people in jail for saying that they're anti-free speech. I mean, the whole thing is just as ridiculous as it can be. But, you know, not to make light of it, it is a serious issue. You are under threat. I do think we should be offering you asylum, and I hope that Anna Paulina Luna helps you get through some of the bureaucratic red tape. I just want to say thank you so much for coming on. We'll be watching your case with interest, and I would love to have you on with any advancements or developments in the future.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure, absolutely. Woman after my own heart, free speech, guns, less Germany. I do love Germany. Naomi Seibt. Again, you can follow her on X at Seibt Naomi, NaomiSeibt.com, on Rumble at Naomi Seibt as well. That's S-E-I-B-T. And again, that video has gone totally viral, and I expect a lot more news about this in the future. If she gets asylum, you know that's going to piss a lot of people off. A lot of people who claim that everybody in the world is an American, anybody who gets across our border is eligible for asylum, they're going to change their tune real quick when it's a bunch of freedom-loving, frankly, pretty German girls. They're not going to feel quite the same way about them as they do about the hordes of dependents that flooded across our border in the last few years. We'll be back on the other side to talk about Charlie Kirk's murder and the developments that have come about thanks to independent research.
Methylene Red is the ultimate compliment to methylene blue. It's like Batman and Robin, right? This is Robin. Okay, I just took this, and I only took three droppers full. And I feel like calm energy, if that makes sense. I feel like if I want to go think about something or go deep into something, I can do that right now. It's like a sour warhead, and it's like, oh my God. And then I'm like, oh wow, can I actually feel it? Same way you feel methylene blue, you feel this. So
look at this, look at it.
Here's your normal methylene blue, right? Look at methylene red. Dude, that's a freaking tank. If you're taking this, you really need this. It's like, you know how Big Pharma always tells you, hey, if you get, you know, this SSRI, you're gonna need this to go with it. Well, this is the natural, more natural way to do it. You got methylene blue and you got methylene red. These complement each other and you need both of them. Go to the alexjonesstore.com today and get yours. And I think right now it's 50% off if you subscribe.
You're tuned in to the War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room. Third hour's in on is on. I don't know what's happening to me today. My words are getting all mixed up here, which wouldn't be a problem except I host a radio show, so it's sort of it's like a runner breaking his leg. We're going to be joined by Ian Wendt in just a second. We're going to talk about the Charlie Kirk murder and all of the developments that have occurred since we were last updated by the FBI, which I think was like 3 days after the murder. We were told they got the guy, and then that's pretty much all we've heard so far. There's some very interesting developments in this. Some rumors flying about the FBI leader, Kash Patel, pretty much getting in a shouting match with Joe Kent, working under Tulsi Gabbard, because they were looking in to potential involvement from foreign actors in the Charlie Kirk murder. And apparently, Kash Patel wanted to shut that down. Very suspicious. Yet another suspicious thing to add to the list of very suspicious circumstances around the death of Charlie Kirk. The shooter, the roommate. The roommate disappeared, by the way. Nobody's seen him in 6 weeks. Little odd, especially when we've learned more about the shooter and the roommate, Lance Twiggs. It seems like Lance Twiggs was pretty well involved, maybe not with the shooting or the planning of the shooting, but certainly in the psychological development of Tyler, if he is in fact the shooter. But we're not seeing a lot of evidence reinforcing that claim. In fact, we're seeing a lot of evidence causing people to question the claim of Tyler Robinson being the sole shooter, the lone actor, as always. And that's always the case when it's presented. You know what? I want to actually start this on a somber note, as we should. I'm genuinely not even going to be able to play this video without crying, but we're going to do it. Clip 28 here. Because with all the talk about Charlie Kirk's murder, all the people who are leaking Charlie Kirk's text messages, or as some people put it, standing on his grave to try to win political points for one side or the other, claiming his legacy for their own, the actual human cost of this can get buried under all of that controversy. So I want to go to clip 28 here, just so we can sort of set the tone of what it is we're talking about when we get into Charlie Kirk's assassination and what it really means. Let's watch.
Erica Kirk just posted this video yesterday, and it was heartbreaking.
Trolley's cup. Everybody, Trolley now on.
It's so easy for people to move on, to just scroll past, to forget about Charlie, the tragedy, his work. But this video reminds us that behind all the noise, behind all the headlines and the slandering, that there is a family. A daughter is without her father. A wife is without her husband. I am not moving on from this. Never forget what they took from us. And when I say never forget what they took from us, I mean it, not out of anger, but out of purpose. We can't afford to cower in fear in the face of grave evil any longer. The moral rot and depravity, the insanity, the chaos is growing exponentially. The enemy behind this evil must be utterly defeated. This evil is what took Charlie Kirk from us, from his family. Don't forget, lest you become complacent. Charlie Kirk's name will not fade. His legacy will not die. The impact Charlie Kirk's martyrdom had for America, for the kingdom of God, should remind us of why we keep pushing forward. For our God, for our families, for our nation, Charlie's daughter, Charlie's children will have the world that Charlie wanted for them. We will make sure of it.
He's exactly right. And of course, I wasn't as big of a fan as I should have been of Charlie Kirk, is what I realized. Like, I wasn't his biggest fan while he was alive. I liked what he did. I was, you know, in support of what he did. In fact, I think the most valuable thing that he did was introduce people that wouldn't be interested in these topics and this conversation about politics and conservatism. He had a real ability to appeal to the normies out there and make arguments that resonated with people. And I always understood that and respected that and appreciated that, but not to the degree that I should have probably. And it's unfortunate that's only after his death that, like, I think a lot of people realize sort of the impact that he had and the influence that he had and the things that he'd accomplished. I mean, I can't see a video of a Turning Point USA event, hell, the one that he was killed at. And you just look at it and you go, this is a college campus in America, and the whole courtyard is jammed with young, excited, healthy, happy people coming together to promote conservatism. Like, that is an amazing thing, and it's an amazing accomplishment. And I don't know who killed him, but I want to find out. And I want to find out for his sake and his family's sake and for America's sake and for the sake of, you know, how we move forward and for the sake of Republicans to try to come together, because obviously this has become a point of division between Republicans. And so I feel like I'm approaching this from genuinely the purest concerns that you can have. I just want to find out who did it. I just want to know the truth. I just don't want to be lied to. I don't want to be fooled. I don't want to be coerced into believing something that isn't accurate. So we're going to, I haven't kept up with all the developments. I could have. I probably would have gotten a lot of views if every single day I came in and dropped whatever rumors were being spread about Charlie Kirk. I've held off on doing that because I want to get the full picture. I want to get the holistic image. I want to be able to present it in its totality, not in little bits that never complete a thought. So we're going to do that today with Ian. Are we connected with Ian, guys? Okay. Ian Wendt, also known as I Winster, and I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, on social media, is a husband and father, an entrepreneur, and proud American First Patriot. He's the founder and CEO of Official Patriot Gear, a premium apparel company whose mission is to emphasize the importance of nonpartisanship, nonpartisan patriotism, and freedom for all. You can follow him on X at I Winster. That's IWENDTSTER. On YouTube, The Ian Wendt Show, and OfficialPatriotGear.com. Ian, great to have you on, sir.
What's up, dude? How you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm very glad to talk to you. And a lot of people are covering this, but I see a lot of your videos, and I think you do a really good job. But as I was talking to you on the phone about this, I want to give you some kudos, and we can cover the ground here. You were very concerned that you didn't want to get credit for other people's work. You were like, you know, if you were interested about this, you should have this person on or this person on. I'm like, well, I just want to do an overview, so I'd like you to come on and lay it all out. But Sam Parker, Ryan Matta, Ian Carroll, Candace Owens, yeah, a lot of people have done a lot of good work on this.
Yeah, absolutely. They've done an incredible job. And so, you know, when we originally talked, you were talking about like Google searches and stuff like that. And yep. I had to emphasize that Sam Parker is the one that's really been kind of the mastermind behind making that happen and getting that out in the public. But yeah, I think it's been a very collaborative effort for sure. You know, I live close to where it happened. And so I kind of got a lot of information and a lot of inside source stuff kind of dumped on my lap. And so I think that just kind of catapulted me into this whole thing in a different way than most people. But yeah, I've really just tried to cover it, you know, as best as I can. And truly, like you said, not just kind of throw stuff out there, but share things that seem to have a lot of weight, right? Because at the end of the day, none of us really know exactly what happened. I think that's the most important thing to state is like, no one knows. And anybody that says they do is just, I mean, steer clear of those people because they don't know. Nobody knows. That's the whole point of this whole idea of conspiracy theory, right? But the other thing I think is really important to understand is that when there's a conspiracy theory, there's a lot of theories. There's a lot of holes that are being poked because that's the whole point of investigative journalism and trying to figure out what actually happened when the official narrative doesn't make sense.
Right.
And ultimately, that's what it means when you talk about a conspiracy theory. It just means that the people that are chasing these theories and trying to figure out what happened, they don't believe the official narrative. It doesn't mean they believe everything that comes out about it.
Right.
If that makes sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely it does. And I completely agree with you. And the problem with the Charlie Kirk murder is there's almost no official information. I mean, what are we even supposed to believe? That they got the guy, it took 33 hours, they got the confession, and that's it, case closed. And it's like, that's all we've heard. I mean, we heard that at the I think it was the mid-September, right? It was the 3 days after we got that. Since then, Cash Patel has said he's going to look into everything. He said, don't worry, we're going to look into the plane. We're going to look into this. We're going to look into that. And then nothing. And then radio silence. And in fact, it's weird because one of the only pieces of information I've seen to come out since the announcement by Cash Patel that actually convinced me more towards Tyler Robinson wasn't even from the FBI. Turkey Tom made this video where I guess he got somebody in the Discord chats, leaked some of the Discord chats, and he goes through and talks about sort of the mental development of Lance Twiggs and Tyler Robinson. And it sort of added to the idea that, okay, there was something weird going on here. This guy was not, doesn't mean he's not a patsy. Patsies have weird life situations too, but that didn't even come from the FBI. So lay out for us, like, what has the FBI given us? And what are some of the major holes in that story?
I mean, dude, what, like, this is one of those things where I don't know where to start because it's like, lay out the holes. The whole thing has holes. None of it, like, if some of it made sense, it would be one thing, but nothing makes sense. I mean, first they said that it was first they said that he assembled the gun and then disassembled the gun and then reassembled the gun and then left the gun.
Right.
And they said that he left it in one place and then they said he left it in another place. They said that he changed clothing outfits. Yet people are noticing that the dudes that they're saying are Tyler Robinson are wearing, they're not only wearing different clothes, they look like two totally different people.
Right.
Then they said that he stuffed the gun down his pants so that he could walk or so that he could get off the building. Like, there's so many holes. And then immediately after that, it's like, okay, so then you consider everything that revolves around the situation in general. And by the way, like, someone I know very well was actually there on the ground when it happened, and like law enforcement. And something that he said that was very interesting was, dude, there was like five or six total campus officers for an event of over 3,000 people. None of the roofs were covered. Does that sound familiar? Mm-hmm. Right. There was hardly any security at all. And he confirmed that not only was there no security, Charlie's security detail refused to coordinate with the campus police and the local law enforcement, and they didn't ask for any more backup. And look, I'm not an expert or anything. I said this on one of my videos, but like, that to me is really weird. And you would assume that they would ask for backup, or that they would at least want to coordinate, because then, you know, there's a bunch of people that are talking about how the only way to get up to the roof is key access or whatever, but the campus police have the keys. And so how could the security have the keys? And it's like, well, yeah, if they didn't coordinate with them, of course they can't, they don't have the keys. Right. There's so many different holes. And it's so hard to just like start one where, because then after that, they talk about how he'd sent love letters, right? Or the love letter that he sent to my lover, roommate. Which, by the way, that thing stunk to high heaven of AI. I mean, it's like a boomer put it together with a bunch of other boomers and was like, yeah, this is sick. Send it.
Right.
Like, this will work for sure. But it just sounds so fake. And I can't decide if they truly just are that incompetent or if I don't know. It blows my mind, man, because none of the official narrative makes sense.
Right. And there's just a total dearth of information. I mean, you can't blame people for doing research when nothing is coming out from the official channels. And what does come out is very suspect and very suspicious and doesn't seem to tell the whole story. And And you've got – there's so many aspects of this because you're right. It's like, okay, do we talk about the Dairy Queen picture? Do we talk about
– 30 miles away? Like he just decided to drive – you know what I mean? So it's there's the Dairy Queen picture, but then there's also the gas station where apparently he drove 30 miles away from this thing to get gas and then drove back and then turned himself into his parents.
And so, and even that, I don't know if we've gotten the official story because it's like what I understood happened was that the kid admitted what he did and the dad sort of got a neighbor together and they turned him in. But then apparently the guy never confessed. Tyler Robinson, as far as I know, has not confessed and he is claiming he's innocent. So it's all mixed up. It's all jumbled.
Not only that, the trans lover or whatever, dude, we still know nothing about that person. And by the way, now they've gone missing. I don't know if you saw that that article that came out, but apparently the trans lover is like missing now. Like nobody knows where they went. They just disappeared off the face of the earth.
Yeah, I've got the New York Post article right here. Location of Tyler Robinson's lover still undisclosed as family lay low months after Charlie Kirk shooting. The transgender lover of Charlie Kirk's alleged killer has seemingly vanished from his hometown 6 weeks after the political assassination that shook the country. Again, I think, again, the only sizable amount of information I've seen contributing to the idea that Lance Twiggs and Tyler Robinson were involved were from this leak to a YouTuber named Turkey Tom. And you know, he does seem to show that like there was, I would be very, very uncertain about letting this guy go, basically, is what I'm saying. It seemed like if Tyler Robinson is the shooter, Lance Twiggs almost certainly knew about it, was involved in it, at least contributed to the motive behind it. That's if this guy's the shooter. But let's talk about this story, because this is the big story from today, and I really want to get into this. Cash Patel shuts down Charlie Kirk foreign influence probe in explosive feud with Trump's counterterror chief. This is from Daily Mail. They say FBI Director Cash Patel crushed efforts by Tulsi Gabbard's closest advisor to see if a foreign power was involved in Charlie Kirk's assassination. The head of the National Counterterrorism Center, Joe Kent, friend of the show, analyzed FBI files to determine whether Kirk's alleged killer received assistance from a foreign power. So he was investigating whether foreign countries had any involvement in this. Apparently, that investigation alarmed Patel, who believed the counterterrorism chief was overstepping by interfering with an ongoing FBI investigation, and they shut it down. They apparently had this meeting in the White House where they ended up all but yelling at each other over this. Again, what? This is weird. Like, this is very weird. Why is he shutting down this investigation?
Right? Because, like, why would you do that? Right? Like, well, I'll tell you this. He's the one that just called us a bunch of conspiracy theorists, even though, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't know how many podcasts I listened to that guy on where he was talking about conspiracy theories and he was talking about draining the swamp and, you know, getting, but that's neither here nor there. Let's just go to the point where, so if you want to convince somebody that the official narrative is the truth and that there's nothing actually additional going on, nothing more nefarious going on, well, you don't pave over the area where the person was assassinated the next day.
Right.
You don't put sweeping gag orders on every law enforcement, every major media personality that had a connection to him.
Every potential witness, right?
Every potential witness out of the 3,000 person crowd. And then you request that there's no cameras in the courtroom. Right. You don't do those three things if you want to prove to somebody that there's nothing weird going on. You know what I mean? And to your point of this foreign probe, like, well, it makes sense that that's coming out right now, Harrison, because the truth is, even though everybody, you know, is probably freaking tired of this, all roads with this kind of lead back to a foreign influence being involved in this, whether it was Tyler Robinson and he was, you know, used as a patsy or whatever. I mean, all roads lead back to that because so many of the things that happened prior to this. When I consider events like this, I always look at who stands to gain, right? Because at the end of the day, you know, it comes down to money. It comes down to money. It comes down to power, control, whatever. But I think money is probably the main motivator for a lot of these things. People do some pretty evil things for money, especially when religion is involved. And we can get into that if you want. But, you know, so many things leading up to this event, the people that stood to gain the most were the people that were being that had the most potential of being hurt by Charlie Kirk and the way that he was starting to turn as far as his ideology was moving. Because I don't think people realize this. Charlie Kirk was You know, I like how you said in the beginning that you did not appreciate him enough. I'm the same way. I picked at him a lot. I didn't like the fact that he was such a Zionist apologist. I didn't like the fact that he was so, you know, just kind of that way. But I appreciated everything else he did. And towards the end, like everybody else, like many other people, I started to recognize that, okay, wait a second, he's figuring things out. Like he understands what's going on. He's kind of towing the line. And I actually said this in one of my first streams. And it was after the Josh Hammer and Dave Smith debate that he hosted at Turning Point. And I literally said, it's going to be really interesting to see if something happens to him after this debate, because it took stones to put this together and put it on this main stage. Because, you know, Charlie Kirk was one of the most influential individuals of, in, I believe, in modern history, but especially when it came to the younger generations. Yep. You know, you're talking the what is it, Gen X? What is the generation, right? I'm 38. Generation right underneath me, was that X, right?
Millennial and then Gen Z.
Z. So you have Gen Z, and then what would high schoolers be? Is that like Alpha or something like that?
I don't even know.
I don't know. But anyway, those two generations. Okay, so consider this. This is a lot to unpack, but it's the reality. For decades, there has been a very strong propaganda war going on in this country, with many people not even understanding that it's happening. And it has been all based on garnering support for a certain country and their actions that they're taking. I think I can say it on here, can I? I don't have to censor myself.
Oh, it's
myself.
Israel. It's 100% Israel. Yeah,
it's Israel.
For sure.
So Hasbara, right? Hasbara has been going on for decades. And they successfully propagandized all of the boomer generation, like to the point where they believed exactly how they needed to believe, and they fell right in line. The younger generation did not. That's why you're getting the pushback that you are, right? That's why the ramp up of the Hasbara campaign with influencers, they're pivoting. They're starting to learn, okay, wait a second, we're losing the propaganda war, like Netanyahu said. So now we have to use influencers. Now we have to use podcasts, et cetera, et cetera. Well, Charlie Kirk was the face, realistically, of the most important and valuable generation to that propaganda war.
Yep.
And not only that, he was about to tap into the next generation, because he was about to do thousands of high school chapters. And so what do you think happens when he abandons the Israel cause because of the text message that Candace Owens dropped, right? Saying I'm forced to abandon the Israel cause because of the donors and the pressure and all the manipulation and everything, right? And all the other things he was talking about, obviously, because he had figured things out. What do you think happens when all of a sudden now he's the face of this, and he's going to campuses, and he's influencing the two most valuable generations to this propaganda war? There's no way that can happen. It's not going to happen. And so that's who Charlie was. And when I look at who stood to gain the most from him not being there anymore, you know, I'm not saying I know, but...
But it certainly, and that's what, you know, people say there's no evidence for Israel killing him. There's no physical evidence, perhaps, but I wouldn't expect there to be anyway. But that's not the only type of evidence. There's circumstantial evidence, of which there is plenty. So I don't think it's outrageous or absurd to say that. You know, like I've said the whole time, my tweet that I put out saying that Charlie Kirk was afraid, you know, he was going to be killed, which apparently there's a lot of other people that can back me up that that's how he felt. It does, you know, if a wife says she's scared of her husband and then she gets murdered, that doesn't mean the husband murdered her. That's not a guilty, you know, decision right there, but it's a good place to start. But it's certainly a piece of evidence that will be added to the pile once all the investigation is done. So we got to go to a break here. We'll be right back. My guest is Ian Wendt. You can follow him on X at IWENDTSTER. We'll be right back on the other side, talk more about this weird development with Cash Patel and Joe Kent getting into a fight in the White House over foreign influence in the Charlie Kirk murder.
What out there could have an effect like methylene blue and synergistically work with it to boost it and supercharge it? So I got with Bigley. They've been making supplements long before I got with them. And I got with Chase, who's really smart. And I said, I want you to go to a couple of different formulators and ask them what you think's the best. Announcing, ladies and gentlemen, Ultra Methylene Red. Now, this bottle is three times the size of an Ultra Methylene Blue bottle, because it's to have the formula, you got to have a lot more stuff in it. But this, ladies and gentlemen, is amazing. And it just came in yesterday. I took it with the Methylene Blue. Incredible workout today. clarity, focus. It is so amazing. And it works with methylene blue, and it works without it. And unlike ultra methylene blue that you can't take if you're on a serotonin reuptake inhibitor or certain other medications, nothing in this has any of those counterindications, but still consult your physician. But when you take it with ultramethylene blue, it just does synergistic things that are amazing. I mean, I had this idea like a month into methylene blue exploding. I said, we got to come out with something that's complementary or even better. This is the research from that. You can buy three bottles, get 25% off. Buy two bottles, get 20% off. Buy one bottle, get 15% off. And when you subscribe and you cancel any time, it locks it in at 50% off at thealexjonesstore.com. So here it is, ladies and gentlemen. And it's available right now exclusively, limited first run. A little more comes in a month, but they got a limited run. Chase, tell us about what is in Ultra Methylene Red.
Well, I got to tell you, I've never been prouder of a product launch than I am of this. I really had a heavy hand in this.
So we are officially the first company through the Alex Jones Store that's ever even invented or launched something like this called Methylene Red. So I'm incredibly proud. And so we put this together as both a methylene blue super enhancer, especially with the cognitive focus benefits, the mitochondria empowerment, and the brain dropping off an extra electron for the brain cells. But it's also an incredible standalone product. I mean, just to give you an example, Alex, one of our best sellers when we were still operating the InfoWars store was Ultra 12. And this has everything that Ultra 12 had in it. 206,000% your daily value of vitamin B12 through methylcobalamin. So this is all backed by studies, by the way. We looked very carefully into this. The P5P, form of B6 that cranks out GABA, serotonin, and dopamine like a neurotransmitter factory. It's got 5,000 micrograms of neurological B12 that regrows damaged nerve cells and shields your memory from the brain drain agenda from the globalists. It's got 5 grams of TMG, a methyl donor juggernaut that recycles homocysteine, fueling DNA repair and detoxifying your brain. It's got acetyl L-carnitine in it. It's a brain-penetrating carnitine that floods your mitochondria with ATP, which is basically energy and reverses cognitive aging. It's got uridine monophosphate in it, the synaptogenesis rocket fuel that grows new dendritic spines and locks in razor-sharp memory, and just so much more. It's even got the CoQ10 in it, of course, which is huge, huge product that we've sold in different forms in the past. But this is the most impressive compilation of ingredients that I've ever seen in a supplement. I'm very proud that we launched it. I'm very proud that it's our second tincture on the market. And when I'm looking through these studies, I mean, here are the benefits that are listed: migraine prevention, cardiovascular help, antioxidant, cellular protection. We've got neurotransmitter synthesis and mood helps people with depression, according to these studies that I've looked at here. Even energy and fatigue reduction, more cardio production, cognitive support, mood cognition, endothelial function. I mean, it goes on and on. Nerve regeneration, cognitive and mood support.
So that's what you're getting with us, ultramethylene bread. Everything we sell is the most insanely powerful, best thing we can come up with, because this is what we take, and it's common sense to want to sell somebody something that really works. So that's why everybody just raves and raves and raves about the products at thealexjonesstore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
All right, welcome back, folks. This is The War Room. We're talking with Ian Wendt. You can follow him on X at IWENDTSTER, or he's on YouTube at The Ian Wendt Show. That's WENDT. And officialpatriotgear.com, officialpatriotgear.com. So, again, we're talking about the Charlie Kirk murder and the ensuing investigation. Talk to us a little bit about, well, let's stick on this for now, because I do want to get into the Google searches, because I think that is a very fascinating development that just happened recently. But sticking with the big story today of Kash Patel and Joe Kent apparently going head-to-head about this, the excuse that was given rings utterly false to me. Tell me if you agree, Ian. They say the Trump administration officials were worried that Kent's probe into foreign interference could provide ammunition to Robinson's defense lawyers, who could then argue more than one suspect was involved in Kirk's murder. I mean, that is ridiculous to me. I mean, first of all, there's the Brady laws. You know, you get a Brady violation, they have to provide any exculpatory evidence to the defense. You can't just not do the investigation in order to not provide the evidence. And if a foreign country is involved And that's something that the defense wants to bring up. They don't need the FBI to do the research for him. They got the guy right there. Like, if he's involved in a foreign with a foreign power, then he could just tell them. They don't need the FBI to do that research. Just nothing about this excuse makes sense. And if they're lying, then there's a reason they're lying. They're trying to cover it. There's a different reason that's motivating them, because this doesn't make any sense to me. Ian, what do you think?
Dude, I couldn't agree more. I think it's such a deflection. Like, it just seems like every single time something like this happens, the most ridiculous excuse is used. Yeah. And we're just supposed to gobble it up and be like, yeah, okay, that sounds plausible. Like,
right.
I can't understand if these people think that we are really that stupid, or if they are just that stupid. Like, that does not sit well with me. That doesn't make any sense. It doesn't seem like a plausible, it just seems like bull crap.
Yeah.
Like, just straight up. It stinks to high heaven.
Yeah.
It doesn't land.
I can't help but agree. And it seems like the response that we're getting when we question this stuff is like Cash Patel being like, guys, it's me. And it's like, okay, so what? Like,
seriously,
that's not gonna work.
I mean, really, really though, because it's like, okay, sweet, thanks, Cash. So far, you've proven that there's gambling in the NBA. Sick, thanks, bro. We appreciate that. That's sick. But like, how about the Epstein files?
Seriously, how about the Epstein files? How about we get some information about the Charlie Kirk murder?
I mean, I just think that, I don't know. You know, I'm no expert, but I just feel like this has been gone. If let's just say for a second that there is no real crazy conspiracy theory and this is actually the official narrative. And if that's the case, man, these guys just suck at the delivery. Like,
yes.
So, like, as bad as you can possibly suck at delivering a message.
Well, here.
And, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm sorry to cut you off, but I completely agree.
No,
and, like, a great example of this is the video that they show where if you extend it 10 seconds earlier, we could see the shot. So it's stuff like that it's like, okay, if you're saying you have all this footage, just show us the footage. It doesn't make any sense to me that you have to withhold it for the trial. Like, why would that be the case? If they have the footage, they should be able to show, with all the cameras there, they should be able to put out a 10-minute video that goes, here he is walking, here he is getting the gun out, here he is firing the gun. Everything that happened is under the purview of a camera. Release the footage and all of us will shut up. If you have the footage, we'll watch it. We're just looking for the truth. They want us to shut up. They have the ability to shut us up if they present the evidence, but they're not presenting the evidence, so we're not going to shut up. It's like, this is not hard to understand, but man, are they bad at conveying what they want, you know, us to think. I don't even know what they expect us to believe at this point.
Yeah, well, and on top of that, I don't know if you saw this, but also, I think his name is Ryan or something like that. Someone got the clearest video footage out of everybody from his, I believe it was his 3 o'clock or his 4 o'clock, Charlie's 4 o'clock or 3 o'clock. I think it was his 3 o'clock. It was Charlie's 3 o'clock. And it's super clear HD footage, super slow motion. And he has actually been going all over. I guess he started on TikTok and got banned from TikTok. And now he's on Twitter. But according to him, and again, I don't know him, so I don't know if this is for sure true or anything, but he made videos and he straight up said, listen, the FBI called me and told me that because this was so traumatizing that I should delete the footage off my phone because it's probably best. Otherwise, I might get PTSD or something like that. And then on top of that, on top of telling him he should probably just delete it off his phone, they called him back to verify that it was deleted off his phone. And instead of doing that, he posted it online. But it's like, again, if you want to prove to somebody that something nefarious is not going on and that your official narrative that is actually the truth, you don't call an eyewitness and tell them to delete the footage off their phone and destroy the evidence ultimately and then verify that it's been done.
That is super creepy. I had not heard about that. Yeah, and just add it to the list of just like inexplicable things that have occurred in this case. And so there's a couple like key components I think people have big questions about. And I just want to know your take on it. The method of execution. Was it a 30-06? Because that doesn't seem to make any sense.
No.
That's one a lot of people have a hard time with. To me, it's the caliber is my only issue. I believe that the guy shot from a rooftop. Every video I've seen shows people looking in that direction as soon as the shot goes off. That makes sense to me. But the caliber of the bullet, not having an exit wound, doesn't make any sense. You could have a projectile with a, you know, a bullet with a smaller projectile inside a .30-06, but what's your take on that? What's your take on some of the alternative death methods, the exploding lavalier mic or things like that?
Yeah. So first, let me just say, I am definitely no expert when it comes to ballistics, but I do have a lot of friends who are. And from everyone that I've talked to and everybody that I've heard and even all the videos that I've watched of other ballistic experts, every single person can agree that it is not a .30-06, because if it was a .30-06, it would have blown his head off. Like,
literally,
there's it's such a massive caliber, and there's no way that that is what actually took him out. As far as the other stuff goes, the lavalier mic theory to me, I haven't completely written it off, but I will tell you that I am more on the side of it not being that. And these are my only reasons why. I wear a mic a lot, right? I wear one of those clip-on mics quite a bit. And if you're putting a mic on, you know this too. If you put a mic on, you're not putting it on diagonally. You're putting it on straight up, right? So for me, the first thing is the trajectory doesn't make sense. It would have popped this way instead of that way. The other thing is, if I had it on right now and I just went like this with my shirt, that sucker would go flying
right
to the moon. And from what I can see in that video, the mic did not come off his shirt. And that's another big sign to me that's like, man, if there was a projectile in there, or if it was an explosive or something like that, that thing should have been long gone.
Right.
And so that theory to me is kind of, I don't know, I'm not totally sold on that one yet. The one that I feel like is probably the most plausible that I've seen is that he actually got shot from his 5 o'clock
right
up this way, and that it was it entered here under his ear and came out his neck, and this was an exit wound.
Yeah.
That is like the most plausible, the theory that makes the most sense to me. But I will also say that the video that I was talking about that this kid just released, that supposedly the FBI called him and told him to delete, the footage is very, very clear, and it's really hard to see if there's an actual entry point. That's the tough part about this. So, man, I don't know. What I know is that it wasn't a .30-06.
And I think most people would agree with you. And I'm no expert either, but that's sort of an unclosed door for me, right? Okay, so we're not sure about that. They say that Tyler Robinson then, you know, leaves and plants the gun and then picks the gun back up. In the meantime, he's texting my love and filling in all of the gaps of the official story for him. Again, a little bit suspicious. But then so what's the timeline with the Dairy Queen and the gas station? So what's your working theory right now? If Tyler Robinson was the guy, how would the Dairy Queen visit and the gas station visit fit into the timeline of him being the shooter?
Dude, I'll be honest. This one to me is like Twilight Zone. When I heard that he was spotted at Dairy Queen, and then I heard that he went to a gas station that was like 30 miles away for absolutely no reason, apparently, and just kind of like is showing up on these cams. That to me is Twilight Zone. I honestly don't know what to think of that. The only thing that I can come up with is that if he was truly the shooter, he was just completely like delirious and just... I don't know.
Disassociated or something?
Yeah, maybe, dude. Like that one does not make sense to me at all. And I've heard every theory about it, and I don't think anybody can really make sense of that one. It just,
and he's in the different clothes.
He was hungry and he needed gas. Like,
and again, he's in the different clothes, so he's not wearing the same thing as the guy in the footage. That doesn't make a lot of sense. How he turns himself in?
Maybe he went somewhere where he felt like it would be easier to blend in, you know, like the last place they would ever check, you know. I mean, a Dairy Queen is the last place that I would check for an assassin. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, I guess I'm
or a gas station. I mean, I don't know.
It doesn't make a lot of sense, and it's so far away, and it doesn't really fit in the official timeline. So that's very suspicious. And then didn't they like demolish the Dairy Queen? Like, that's one of those things where it's like that doesn't even if. You know, he was a patsy and he got caught. Like, why demolish the building? Why pave over the crime scene? It's like, what? Even if everything you're telling us is legit, these actions make no sense.
That's the thing about this. That's why I'm telling you that for me, it's going to be very, very, very hard for someone to convince me that the official narrative is the truth. Because again, it's like I said in the beginning, if one of the things made sense, like if there was like one piece that was like, okay, yeah, that's pretty plausible, then I'd be like, all right, like, let's move from
build
there.
Off that. Yeah.
But nothing makes sense. None of it. Not one piece of it. Not the beginning, not the end. And, you know, you were even talking about the rifle assembly and stuff. One of my buddies, Ricky, I don't know if you saw this video. Joe Rogan showed it on his show, I think. He literally disassembled.
Oh, yeah, tries to. Yeah, I did. It takes like it takes a while.
And he wasn't under duress. He even talks about this. He's like, I wasn't under duress. I wasn't, you know, super anxious. I wasn't like. My blood wasn't freaking pumping, you know, like crazy. And my adrenaline wasn't going like insanely. And it still took him, I think, like 3 or 4 minutes to do it with three different tools. According to the official narrative, there was a screwdriver on the roof and that's what he did it with. And it's like, no, he didn't. That's not how that works.
Yeah. You know? So many aspects of this are just like, what? Like, why even tell us that? Nobody's going to believe that. Like on the face of it, it's absurd. So,
Exactly. Like, just shut up. If anything, right. Don't say anything. You know what I mean? Like,
it would literally be better. Yeah. Yeah. And there's so much to this. I mean, people have made hours and hours and hours and hours and hours of videos about this. And it seems like everything sort of spirals out. You get these characters that show up that people start looking into. And it's like, well, wait, was this guy a random bystander? Or why does his family own all of these houses on this block? Like, there's so many angles to this. One of the latest ones are these Google searches. So very simply explained, you can use the Google Trends function to find out who is searching what where, basically. And so you can get you can get heat maps and frequency maps that show who's searching what where. And so you have these – you basically everybody involved in the assassination, from the assassin to the surgeon to the lawyer defending the
– all of them have been searched.
They'd all been searched. Month or so before the assassination, specifically from Washington, D.C., Huntsville, Alabama, and Israel. And, of course, Huntsville, Alabama has a giant FBI headquarters. So it's like somebody was searching these names, not any time in the 3 years previous to that. These names never got searched. They're like, you know, distinctive names. It's not like, you know, Bill Smith and everybody searching Bill, you know, somebody searching Bill Smith once a day. No, these are like specific names. Tyler Robinson searched from Israel and D.C. in July before Charlie's assassinated. What else has been discovered about this? And yeah, here's the guy that does it, @RealBaronPodcast. So yeah, shout out to @RealBaronPodcast and @Based Sam Parker and @SamParkerForSenate. These guys have been doing a ton of great work on this. We don't want to take credit for the effort they put in. Explain about these Google searches and what you think they mean.
So again, it's one of those things where it's like same thing with the ballistics, right? Like I'm definitely no SEO expert, but what this is showing is that obviously somebody was searching for all these people. And we're not just talking about Tyler Robinson. We are talking about the exact hospital where he was brought. We're talking about the medical examiner. By the way, this is the same medical examiner that said that the bullet was lodged in his body and that it was a miracle bullet because it didn't kill anybody behind him. And they came out with this whole story of the Man of Steel. And then Andrew Colvett ran with it. Okay, that was another thing for me that was like, what? No. Like, there's some – it was another one of those circumstances where I felt like they were using religion and faith to kind of distract everybody from actually looking into it, being just, you know, no. Understand that this was an act of God. This was a miracle, and let's get everybody riled up in their faith so that they're not paying attention and not asking the questions, right? Mm-hmm. I feel like that happens all the time, and this was another circumstance for that. But the medical examiner was the one that said that. Then they searched for every single surgeon, every one of them in that hospital, and it all happened in the months leading up to his assassination, specifically around the times when Charlie was getting pretty loud about Israel and pretty loud about other things. As a matter of fact, I believe it was the 15th or the 16th that Charlie did an episode on his show where he basically held the Trump administration's face to the fire and said, listen, you're losing the base. Mm-hmm. And the reason why is because of the Epstein files. Right. And so here's the 10-step plan that I've laid out that is necessary for you guys to follow in order to get the base back. And he literally laid out every single step. And there were a lot of things in there that I can imagine if the administration saw and heard, they were like, oh, this isn't cool.
Right.
And not only that, Charlie also was, from what I've heard, he was like one of the main people that was telling Trump not to bomb Iran.
Right.
And then Trump got pissed at him apparently about that as well. And that's just one piece, but it was also right around the time that he did that debate. It was like 3 or 4 days that the searches for the hospital started after he did that debate at Turning Point with Dave Smith and Josh Hammer. And again, it was all these people, and these searches kept on popping up so weirdly in Washington, D.C. mainly, and Israel mainly, and then, like you said, in Texas.
Huntsville, Alabama, I think it was.
Or Alabama, excuse me. Yeah, Alabama, excuse me.
No, and it's very weird. And I personally can't think of an innocent reason why all of these names in particular would be searched from these places in particular. It's not like, oh, they were searched in Madagascar and Russia and Israel. It's like, no, these things were only searched in Israel, only searched in D.C. Again, these are all just, you know, if you're piling up chips on one side of the border or the other, you know, the side of suspicion has way more chips right now than the side of we've got the right guy and everything's under control. And, you know, early on, one of the first things that anybody said about the assassination, John Solomon, who has fantastic sources and is broken major stories, he mentioned foreign elements being involved, foreign intelligence providing information. And of course, the potential assassin of Trump that was caught apparently had, you know, foreign connections and foreign apps on his phone. The other guy at the golf course was like a recruiter for Ukraine, had a ton of Ukraine connections. So the idea that there could be foreign influence around an assassination is by no means an absurd thing to claim. And yet, you know, Joe Kent is looking into this and the FBI is shutting him down doing it. I can't see a innocent reason for that to happen either. There's just so much about this that screams suspicion. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter who kills him. Because of this assassination, the methods and manipulation tactics of the Israel lobby have been put on full display. And I think that's extremely valuable for people that want to know how influence campaigns are carried out, how pressure and coercion is carried out on high-level political targets. We are seeing into the belly of the beast. We're seeing how the sausage is made. We're seeing the text messages trying to pressure Charlie into doing one thing or another. We see how they're offering money first and then threats. And I mean, it's fascinating to see this influence operation at work.
And listen, that text thread to me was like the number one thing that really kicked everything off, I feel like, for people when Candace dropped that text thread. And I'll explain why. Let me first say this though. I really want to get a hold of one of my friends that's like a real SEO expert and ask him if is there any possibility that there's some kind of like bug or something and things are showing up weirdly and there's some kind of weird anomaly going on. You know, I would like to look into that because that's the only thing I can imagine.
Well, I know
potentially explaining.
I know the guy who did it, Barron, because I watched some of his videos. He talked to somebody about that, and basically he talked to somebody at Google, and he basically said not every search will show up, but if a search shows up, it's because somebody searched it. So, you know, if you go on Google and search something, it won't necessarily get included in trends. Most do, but not all of them. But if it shows up in trends, it was definitely searched. So those are valid results.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. So what I'll say, though, about the text thread is this. The text thread specifically, and again, I am not accusing anybody. I don't know exactly what happened. Like, we are just asking the questions, trying to get to the bottom of this. But this, to me, was one of the most telltale things out of everything that happened, because you have Andrew Colvett, who, right after Charlie died, is talking about how he was still pro-Israel. He also talked, they were all talking about how Charlie and Candace didn't really have a relationship, how Candace was kind of estranged from Turning Point and wasn't really involved anymore. And he also even specifically said that the donors they were losing were not Israeli donors. He literally said that on a podcast. This is just like within the week of Charlie being murdered. You also had Josh Hammer do a podcast episode where he not only promoted his book, but he also talked about how Charlie was such a advocate for Israel. You also had Pastor Rob talk about how he was such an advocate for Israel. And
Benjamin
also
Netanyahu.
He even And Netanyahu. Pastor Rob, though, even said that Charlie said that he wanted him to do a mission in Israel. This all happened like within a week after Charlie died. And then Candace drops that text thread. And just look at the text. It proved that all of that was either lies or complete ignorance for their own selfish gain. Because it's like, okay, he says he obviously speaks outwardly about the opposition and like the pressure that's coming down and the lost Israeli donors, right? So that's the first lie, is that the donors weren't Israeli. The next one is he's going to leave the Israel cause. So that's the next big lie, is that he was obviously turning against the Israel cause. He was definitely not pro-Israel when he was killed. That is a guaranteed fact, because this text thread was one day before he was killed.
Right.
And Josh Hammer was in that text thread. And Pastor Rob was in that text thread. And Andrew Colvett was in that text thread.
Yes, yeah, so they can't claim ignorance. I mean, they were in the text thread. So, you know,
that's what I'm saying.
It doesn't necessarily prove they killed him, but it proves they lied about, you know, his influence.
Yeah. That's right. And then also the Candace Owens thing. He literally says, I'm going to bring Candace on, because they're talking about how he's being pressured to cancel Tucker. Right. And so he says, I'm going to bring Candace on to piss them all off. And everybody that knew, anybody that watched Charlie from, like, you know, even from afar, you knew that Charlie and Candace Owens were super tight. They were like best friends. And so that was an obvious lie. But then the part about her not being part of Turning Point was also a massive lie. She was still on the site as the leader of Blexit. Not only that, she spoke at a women's conference for Turning Point, I think like 6 months prior to that. She went on tour with them the summer prior. And so all of these things were revealed in that one text thread. And that for me was like, okay, those are all lies. Yeah. And so now I want an explanation. Why is the pastor lying about that? When he's the founder of Turning Point Faith.
Right.
So a lot of those donations, I can only imagine, are going to Turning Point Faith. No. And then right after that, man, it's just, there's so many things. But then right after that, every single one of them are going on these podcast campaigns to prove their innocence.
Yeah.
And for me, I'm like, listen, even if someone was murdered that was close to me, even if people started saying that they thought it was me, I know it wasn't me. Like, yeah. I know I'm innocent. And so, but I also know that I want to know what, how, why, and who, right? And so if all of these people that are accusing me, even though they're accusing me, if they're all trying to get to the bottom of those questions and I can't do it myself, what would I do? I would sit back, take all the hits. Who cares? I'm innocent. I don't need to worry about that. But I'm going to let them do their thing. I'm not going to go on this massive campaign to try and prove my innocence. Because look, I know I'm innocent.
It's very suspicious, and just like everything else about this, it's very suspicious. Thank you for coming on, Ian. Ian Wendt at iWinster on X, YouTube, The Ian Wendt Show, official patriotgear.com. Thanks so much for joining us. Hopefully we'll get answers one day.
Thanks.
So far, I'm not satisfied, and I don't think you should be either. We need justice for Charlie Kirk. Thanks for being with us.
Quick, I just wanted to plug the Methylene Blue. I'm a new supplement buyer from Alex Jones Store, and I keep hearing people talking about the Methylene Blue, and I'm like, you know what? I don't know what the hype is all about, but I definitely want to try it. And what I noticed is I didn't get the sensations that a lot of the other people said that they got, you know, like the tingling fingers and like this, you know, euphoria. But I do have an ample amount of energy, and I'm disabled, so I'm a housewife, and whenever you're at home, day in and day out, 7 days a week, it really tends to drag after some time. And there were things that I wasn't doing around the house that I should have. But now I'm getting things done like really quick. I have all this extra time on my hands now. And I really think it's the Methylene Blue that's been giving me the energy. And it's so funny because now like my silly husband's calling me a meth head, which is hilarious. But yeah, so I'm going to stick on that. And I actually have some bovine coming in today, so I can't wait to try that out. I'm also going to give that to my dog because, you know, I need a lot of help too. And I brought online that's really good for your dog if you give them like a small little amount of the food. So I'm going to do that. But yeah, I just thought I would tell you guys about my experiences so far. So,
well, Jen, thank you. That's amazing to hear. I mean, love to hear that, honestly. I mean, that's the reason why Alex has created the shop, so people can get, you know, get healthier and not be relying on big pharmaceutical companies, but instead take control of their health. So that's good to hear. You know, I fluctuated weight-wise too. And so finding something that works is really important. And not to get hooked on those like high caffeine, insane chemicals, energy drinks, which so much of us have relied on over the years. I literally was getting anxiety from one of them. And so I too am on the blue these days. So I guess your husband would call me a meth head, but it's good to hear from you, Jen. I love it. I think it's great. And I love to hear from you as well.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.